In about 15 minutes, we're going to go over some of the good from yesterday's game. As much as we are harping on this offensive line issue, there were some guys that really, I thought, stood out in the loss to Detroit in preseason game number two. So we'll get to the positive side of things in 15 minutes. It's D-Day in D.C., Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. You can tweet me at TheDentonDay. We've spent the entirety of the show so far being very upset with the play of the offensive line in the second preseason game for the Commanders. Justifiably so. They were not good. And it ruined the only series that the offense was going to play. The center position in particular was not good. The tight end blocking wasn't great on that second down play where Jaden was going to, more likely than not, connect with Treylon Burks for a pretty massive chunk of yardage on second down. I actually love the play call, too, by David Blau. It's very similar to some of the things that they ran with Diami, where Diami was having those big games, particularly in the game against Detroit. That crossing pattern where you send Terry deep. They cue in on Terry, and then you send a guy underneath of him. It was going to be a huge gain. Tight ends can't block the edge, and then Jaden gets sacked. Thank God he was not taken to the ground. But the offensive line play in general in the center position has been a very big talking point for the entirety of the offseason. And it felt validating. I wish it didn't. I would have loved to be wrong about, hey, I don't think they did enough at center. There are some things that I was wrong about this offseason, which we will get to. It's actually one of the positive things from yesterday. So again, I like to be wrong sometimes. I would have loved to be wrong about the center spot. And we just, everyone who has said anything about, hey, this isn't good enough, looked very, very intelligent yesterday and continues to look very, very intelligent today. Dan Quinn was asked about the performance of the offensive line following the game yesterday. Here's what he said about the entire group.
Yeah, there's a lot of groups that went in and out. And so the first crew of like Connerly and Cosme, I like how they're playing together, their communication. And Sam's really throwing a good camp. He's like maybe playing the best, you know, that I've seen him play in the couple, 3 years. He's technique, he's on it. I like what I'm seeing, you know, on the outside, you know, at left tackle. So we got work to do to figure out, you know, where we want to get to in center. But with a lot of people in, it wasn't like a one line, two line. So Wiley played some, and then we moved. You probably saw different guys at left tackle, right tackle. We rotated guys at guard. So today was about opportunities, giving guys their ops, and I'll look forward to taking a look.
So we got some acknowledgement there from Dan Quinn. We have work to do at center. I agree. Dan Quinn and I on the same page. Dan Quinn and you on the same page. They got some work to do with center. What that work is going to be now becomes the big question. But it is worth pointing out, this entire camp, at least on social media and with calls from people that had gone out to training camp and just talking to some of the fans and some of you who are out there, which is always fun. If you see me out there at training camp, not this year because fans aren't going to be out there anymore, come say what's up. I like meeting you guys out there. But in talking to people, everyone's been like, man, what is going on with Josh Connerly? Like, oh, it feels like we expected Josh Connerly to be a lot better, and Josh Connerly hasn't been super awesome in training camp. I thought yesterday Josh Connerly was pretty good. Small sample size, only 3 plays. But that duo of Sam Cosmi and Josh Connerly on the right side, I'm pretty comfortable with. As you sit here right now, late August, a few weeks out of September, I think Connerly's been okay. Cosmi, as Dan Quinn mentioned, has been good. He's the guy that I'm least concerned about. If I'm making a list, right, 1 through 5, what are my concern levels? Who am I most concerned with? At the top of that list for guys that I'm least concerned with is Sam Cosmi. Right below Sam Cosmi, almost on the exact same line, but right below Sam Cosmi is Brandon Coleman. I'm pretty comfortable with whatever Brandon Coleman is doing. I think he, in particular, has also had a really good camp. I thought prior to the Laremy Tunsil injury, he was going to win the left guard spot from Chris Paul. Then you have the Tunsil injury, and that forces Coleman to shift to left tackle. But I was under the assumption that he was going to win the left guard spot. So he's had a really good training camp. Then there's a bit of a gap on my pseudo list that we're making here, this imaginary list. So work with me here. There's a bit of a gap, and then there's Josh Connerly. despite the fact that he hasn't been super duper awesome and amazing in camp, I think you're starting to see him put the pieces together. He's had a lot of really good reps against guys that are on this defensive line for Washington, that my expectation is the defensive line is going to be pretty darn good. So him getting some good work against some good players is positive. So I'd put Josh Connerly on that list right there. And then after Josh Connerly, there's a very sizable gap to Chris Paul. I would rather have Brandon Coleman at left guard right now with somebody else at left tackle who is competent. I'd rather have Brandon Coleman at guard because I think he shores up the interior of the offensive line. And with a team that's going to play a lot under center, which means you'll see some creative designs with some running stuff, which is going to rely a lot on guards being athletic and either getting to the second level very quickly or having some pulling action very quickly, I trust Brandon Coleman a little bit more in that regard than I do Chris Paul. Chris Paul has worried me a little bit with some of the stuff in terms of getting to the second level very quickly. I do think he actually played pretty decent yesterday and tried his best to make up for some of the issues at center, but he's still pretty low on this list of guys that I'm least worried about. And then at the bottom of the list, like we're talking, this list is so long, it's like Chris Jericho's list of 1,000 holds from WCW in the late 90s, where that list was falling out of the wrestling ring. It is so long, it's longer than any CVS receipt that you've ever seen, but at the very bottom of the list is whatever the hell they're doing at center, because it's not up to standard with what needs to be of the 2026 offensive line. The other positions are doable. The center position is not. When we all threw our hands up and were hollering at AIPFF when they put together this list of best and worst offensive lines and Washington was at the very bottom of the list, how can you do this? Oh, this offensive line is so much better than this AI-ridden company is going to think that it is. Not the case, because the center position is weighing them all down. Dan Quinn admitted as much, and that's cool. I'd like that he's saying that. What are you going to actually do about it? You can say one thing. There are a lot of people in life that make promises. They say one thing. Hey, I'm going to get you back with some money. I appreciate you borrowing from me. I'm going to get you back with some money. Ooh, card's not working. I'll get you back when the card is working. Ooh, I appreciate you hooking me up with a drink. I'll get, like, you, there's a lot of people in your life that have made promises that have not then acted on that promise. I need to see action. I don't need words. I need to see action. You can tell us at the press conference the center position isn't good enough. What actions are going to be taken to address that? Or are we just going to point out the flaw without making any sort of decision and making any sort of adjustment to fix the flaw? I don't like it when people just point out problems with no solutions, especially if they are in a position of power to influence a solution. If you're going to point the problem out, there better be something that follows up to, hey, this is the fix for the problem. Jaden Daniels was also asked about the offensive line after only getting three plays in the preseason game. Here's what Jaden said about the offensive line and gelling together.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still a work in progress. And like I said, it's only preseason. We still got practices and everything. And by the time we get to game one, you know, we'll have it set in stone. But for me, it's really just trusting those guys up front, trusting the play calling, trusting my reads and everything, getting the ball out, and what I have to do and playing on time.
He's putting a lot of trust in those dudes up front, man. He is. And that's natural. The quarterback is going to have to trust his offensive line. He's putting a lot of trust into the guys up front, and at least the center spot, I don't know that you should be trusting at the moment. Now, Jaden's going to do his thing. I'm not worried about him. I think eventually he will get, if they don't make a change, which would be disastrous. If they don't make a change, I do think that he will end up making the best out of everything. But what is currently in front of him right now needs to be better. And I don't want to see him be in the position where he feels like he constantly has to make the best out of everything. What I do not want to see is the play calling make adjustments to where moving the pocket is a necessity rather than a luxury. If you got a bad offensive line, it's not out of the ordinary to move the pocket to get your quarterback away from all of the big bodies at the line of scrimmage who are constantly breaking through the offensive line. That's a necessity. I want them to move the pocket as a luxury, because Jaden Daniels, at least through camp at this point, has been really accurate on the run. I want them to move the pocket as a luxury to put pressure on the defense to where the linebackers and the safeties start to freak out a little bit. When Jaden moves the pocket, they come off of their assignments. Then you have guys running butt naked wide open on the backside of plays deep down the field that Jaden is then able to connect with. I want all of the good of moving the pocket, all of the benefits that come with moving the pocket. I don't want it to be a necessity because you can't trust what you have on the inside. And because you as an offensive mind, as an offensive coordinator, and David Blau have not been given all of the ingredients necessary. I look at David Blau as an offensive coordinator as a bit of a chef, right? If you're going to be a great chef, there are great chefs that can make the most out of really bad ingredients. If you're only shopping at like Walmart, right? There are great chefs that might be able to make a five-star meal out of ingredients that you can find at Walmart. But if you gave them their choice, they're probably going to Whole Foods. They're probably going to Wegmans. They're going to some high standard grocery stores that us regular people don't even know about. Wegmans is too expensive for me. There are things that are above Wegmans in the grocery store tier list. You want your offensive coordinator to have the pick of the litter at the skill position and at the offensive line so he can get as creative and dynamic as possible. And right now, I don't feel that David Blau has that. I did not anticipate that Jaden Daniels or Dan Quinn was going to get up there and be like, our interior offensive line was not good enough. The center position sucked. Did not expect them to say that. In fact, I'd be very worried if they said that. But I liked the honesty from Dan Quinn where he said, we need to work on the center spot. It's not up to par. We need to make some adjustments. Now we are demanding them to make the adjustments. You got to do what you say. If you're going to say it, do it. I'm Denton Day. It's D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. We've gone about 75 minutes of a lot of negativity at the offensive line. Let's get the power of positivity back in because there were some good things from preseason game number 2 against the Lions. I'm going to highlight some of the guys that really stood out to me, and then I want your best players from the preseason game against Detroit at 800-636-1067. If somebody really stood out to you, give them a little bit of love. Give me a call at 800-636-1067. Tweet me at The Denton Day. We go to the power of positivity next on 106.7 The Fan. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. You can tweet me at The Denton Day. We are going to break from our offensive line conversation. Let's get some positivity back in the swing of things. I'm ready to make a pretty bold proclamation based off of what we saw against Detroit, but also what we saw against Miami. And it relates to one of the really positive things from yesterday. And I'm just ready to go out here and do it. The safety position is going to be so significantly better under Durante Jones than what we have seen the past 2 years with a Joe Witt style of defense. Because one of the biggest takeaways from yesterday in the early portion of the game was that Tyler Owens looked awesome. And it feels like they're using him as kind of a safety linebacker hybrid almost. He's lining up in a bunch of different positions throughout the course of a ball game, but the way that he was flying around yesterday was really cool to watch, really fun to watch. And I can say the same thing. Are you ready for this? Are you sitting down? I can say the same thing about Quan Martin. I think in the 2 preseason games that we have seen Quan Martin play, he's looked like a completely different player from what he was at the very end and really for all of 2025. He looks more comfortable. He's playing with a lot more freedom. It looks like he is trusting his instincts significantly more. And the level of freedom and the trusting of the instincts that we're seeing, not just Quan Martin, but Tyler Owens, but multiple of the cornerbacks play with in the Jurante Jones scheme has been such a breath of fresh air. And I'm ready and willing to proclaim that the safety position is going to be a very big positive for Washington in 2026. I loved what I saw from those two guys. I liked what I've seen from Percy Butler. Nick Cross is an exciting player. The only safety that hasn't looked awesome, and the only safety that I feel like is in a little bit of jeopardy right now in terms of his job status, has been Will Harris. I mean, Will Harris took the worst read imaginable on the Joshua Dobbs touchdown run. I think there are a lot of guys that you can point to on that play that did not play that very well. Joshua Joseph crashes way too hard on the fake. I think because everyone is crashing on the fake, Sonny Styles crashed on the fake, and then he got sealed off by a tight end and allowed Joshua Dobbs to run right past him. I bet if you're asking Sonny Styles, he's saying, I wish I had that play back. Saying, I got to blow right through the tight end. He tries to kind of spin off of him, doesn't get there. But the worst read on the play was Will Harris, who ends up on the complete other side of the field because he still seemed to think that the running back had the football. He's the only safety that it feels like has not had a super stellar or at least super positive training camp. All these other dudes have looked really, really good. And that's been surprising to me. I didn't think that Quan Martin was going to look good. I thought Tyler Owens would. I like Tyler Owens. I didn't think that Quan Martin was going to be looking as good as he did or as good as he has. And I think that speaks to Jurante Jones and his scheme. So the two big takeaways, positive safety play, Tyler Owens and Quan Martin. Offensively, the quarterback three conversation is over. It is Ethan Kaliakmanis. And this has been a little tough to swallow for your boy, because as soon as they drafted him, I was on 980, and we were doing the Saturday draft show. We've done that for a couple of years now. I'm a college football guy. I host a show on Sirius XM during the college football season. So the NFL draft is like my playground. I love the NFL draft because it's a lot of guys that I have watched throughout the college football season and a lot of guys that I've talked to during the college football season getting drafted. It's a really cool thing. When they drafted Ethan Kaliakmanis, I was perplexed. Didn't know why they drafted him. I personally was a little bit more in favor of Garrett Nussmeier out of LSU than I was Ethan Kaliakmanis, but I watched him at Rutgers, and Rutgers didn't really throw the ball a ton. They were a run-first team. He had came from Minnesota, where Minnesota didn't really throw the ball a ton either. They had also been kind of a run-first team for a majority of the time, really since P.J. Fleck has been their head coach. So I was a little confused. Hey, what do you see in the guy from Rutgers that you didn't see in the quarterback who's supposedly healthy from LSU? Why'd you go that direction? Egg on the face for me. Because throughout training camp and throughout the first two preseason games, it's night and day. Him versus Sam Hartman, it is night and day. Kaliakmanis is far more comfortable in what they're doing offensively. He is far more comfortable in throwing the ball down the field. The poise that he has and the patience that he has in the pocket is far greater than what we have seen from Sam Hartman. It might even be a little bit better than what we have seen from the scheduled quarterback two in Marcus Mariota. Now, Mariota is still going to be two. I'm not ready to say that Kaliakmanis should be the primary backup. I'm not there yet, but he is definitively quarterback three. I didn't think Hartman played awful yesterday. In fact, if you look at the numbers, by the numbers, Hartman was 9 of 11 for 67 yards. From a completion percentage, that's a pretty good clip to have, especially taking into consideration that they were doing the swapping bit, where one guy would play a couple of series, and then the next guy would come in and play a series or two, and then they would just rotate back and forth. I did not like that. I think that is partially what led to one of the fumbles that Hartman had, because he had been on the bench for a little bit, and Kaliakmanis came in the second quarter, and then they threw Hartman back out there to see him in the two-minute drill, and it didn't go well. We also got robbed by not seeing Kaliakmanis in the two-minute drill at the end of the game with an opportunity to win the game. I would have loved to see him with an opportunity to win the game. But by the numbers, he was 11 of 14 for 162 yards. And if that doesn't highlight the difference between these two guys, I don't know what does. Both of them were getting the ball out of their hands. They were getting the ball to their guys. But one guy completed 9 passes for 67 yards. The other guy completed 2 more passes for 162 yards. So nearly 100 yards more in just 2 more completions. It really speaks to Cal McManus is pushing the ball down the field. He's not afraid to throw it deep to Nick Nash, who was so confused. I mean, Nick Nash was so confused at how accurate the ball was, he almost dropped it. On that big play from Cali McManus to Nash down the sideline, the 55-yarder, it was so on the money that I don't think he thought it was going to be that on the money. He was like, oh my God, it's literally right in my hands. He had to double clutch that thing. You want to talk about walking it to him. Cali McManus walked it right to him, 55 yards down the field. There's just a level of play that he has and a level of upside that he has that for the betterment of the team, if you're going to keep 3 quarterbacks, which is the expectation that I have, that they're going to keep 3 quarterbacks, for the betterment of the team, he has to be the guy that is quarterback number 3. So that was really positive yesterday. I also really liked how Antonio Williams performed. 3 catches, 41 yards. He had one where he had to kind of not only climb the ladder, but the ball was a little behind him. Didn't matter. Went up, got it. They have really high hopes for what Antonio Williams is going to be long-term here. And those hopes are higher than what they ever had for Luke McCaffrey when they drafted him in the 3rd round and what they ever had for Jalen Lane when they drafted him in the 3rd round. As a natural wide receiver coming out of college, Antonio Williams was further ahead and more NFL-ready than both of those two guys. He hasn't gotten a ton of reps with the ones throughout camp, learning the NFL offense, learning the NFL style. But when push comes to shove, when it is just about playing football and letting the instincts and letting the natural God-given abilities take over, Antonio Williams is a dog. He has all of the upside in the world. It is not an accident that in the first press conference he ever did as a member of the Commanders, Stephon Diggs highlighted, hey, 14 can play. I hope that as training camp closes and as real practices start to ramp up for the regular season when the cutdown is made, that Antonio Williams climbs the depth chart because there is something with him. They got something with him at the wide receiver spot. Inside, outside, doesn't matter. Polished route runner, good hands, and then as we saw yesterday, can go up and make some plays. Really loved what I saw from him. I'd love to know who you were most taken aback by positively yesterday. We've done the negative stuff with the offensive line. Who did you love in Washington's Week 2 preseason game against the Detroit Lions? 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. We'll take some of your phone calls. The player that stood out the most to you positively, you can tweet me as well at the Denton Day. It's D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan, the Team 980. At the Denton Day on Twitter, you can tweet me there, follow me throughout the course of the season. The Commanders have one more practice in Ashburn before a joint practice with the Ravens, and then it's cutdown day. They got a preseason game with the Ravens, and it's cutdown day. They're going to need to make some really tough decisions. I made a prediction for the final 53 after 2 weeks of the preseason. I will share that with you in 24 minutes at high noon. I will give you my final 53 after 2 weeks of the preseason. But right now, our eyes are focused on yesterday and highlighting guys that made a bunch of plays, guys that performed at a really high level in the preseason game against Detroit. I liked what I saw from Tyler Owens and Quan Martin on defense, and I really liked what I saw from Ethan Cali McManus and from Antonio Williams, the two rookies on offense. Who did you love? 800-636-1067. We'll go to the phones. Sean is in Falls Church, wants to jump on the program. Sean, what's up?
Double D, what is good? I'm excited about the season, and I was excited about, even generally, the linebacking core. When Frankie Louvu is your slowest guy out there, that's a complete, you know, night and day situation from what was, you know, happening last year. The defense in general, but the linebacking core, the speed, the energy, the drive that they have now is just, it's so refreshing. And it just, even just speed, regardless of what personnel is, tells me that the defense is going to be five teams better. So, you know, take it from 32nd, you'd take it to, you know, 28th or something, 27th. But with the personnel, with the scheme, with what they've got elsewhere, I think it actually could be middle of the pack, which is amazing from what was happening last year.
Yeah, Sean, I appreciate the call. I'm with you. Middle of the pack is, I would consider, so long as everybody stays healthy, the floor of this defense. Every issue that we had with the defense last year has been addressed, with the exception of getting a true lockdown corner. The Amos injury has been, injuries plural, has been a really big knock in camp so far, because the expectation is that he is going to be one of your outside corners. But Amik Robertson, who had a big play yesterday that caused the fumble that Joshua Josephs jumped on to score Washington's first touchdown, he has been, top to bottom, I'd say, not just the best corner in camp, he's been one of the best defensive players in camp. I think he's had a really, really solid outing in the first few weeks as a Commander. The corners are the only thing that I'm still worried about, but I'm in agreement with you in that they have addressed and gotten rid of, respectfully, all the slow pokes. Hey, you're slow, we don't want you. You're fast, we'll take you. And that's what they did. And you mentioned Sonny Styles, and I feel like we should talk about this for at least a little bit. Styles is getting crushed on Twitter. Twitter's a hellhole. The bottom of the barrel. Hades on Earth. It's awful. But there are people crushing Sonny Styles on Twitter. I look at the Joshua Dobbs touchdown, and I say, I bet Sonny Styles wishes that he just destroys the tight end that tried to block him. Maybe he didn't play the fake as hard as he did, but destroys the tight end that tried to block him. And then stops that touchdown run. Is it his fault? No. Will Harris, who's the safety that is supposed to be waiting for Josh Dobbs after he pulls it when Joseph's crashed a little too hard, Will Harris is supposed to be waiting there, and he played the fake way worse than anybody. He was on the complete other side of the field. But Styles is getting destroyed and mutilated all over social media. People are calling him a bust. He stinks. He wasn't worth the 7th overall pick. And it has my brain in a blender. Has he been awesome? No. He's going to tell you he hasn't been awesome. I'm not worried about a guy making preseason mistakes in the preseason. The games don't count right now. It's literally the design of what you are supposed to do. Get the bad stuff out of the way. You'll remember, or maybe you'll remember, but years ago, in 2021, so 5 years ago, which is crazy. It feels like 2021 was yesterday. But 5 years ago, there was a rookie wide receiver that played on a team in the AFC. He was drafted very, very highly. And throughout the preseason and throughout the preseason games, he had an issue catching the football. And he had said, it's a little bit more challenging for me, or it's been an adjustment for me, because the NFL football doesn't have the white stripe that the college football has. It's easier for me, it's easier for my eyes to see the white stripe that I played with in college. The NFL ball doesn't have that. And he was dropping passes all the time. He came here to play a preseason game, and he was dropping passes in the preseason game, and there were segments of that team's fan base and segments of people nationally that were ready to write this one wide receiver off in 2021. Who is that wide receiver?
Can I guess?
It was Ja'Marr Chase. Oh, sorry, Wes. You should have guessed.
I was
going to
go with him.
It was Ja'Marr Chase, who had issues playing in the preseason and has only become the best wide receiver in the NFL since. That's not to say Sonny Styles is going to be the Ja'Marr Chase of linebackers. That's a very, very high bar. But it highlights that it's preseason. If you're playing like an all-pro in preseason, by the time the regular season starts, you ain't going to be playing like an all-pro. That's not how the game works. So while it stinks that he's not playing at a high, super-duper high level, it stinks that we're not walking away from every game being like, yep, drilled it. I don't care in the preseason. And I think what we have seen on social media in the last, 10 days, if I just had to like give a number, in the last 10 days, people want to pile on certain players on Washington, fair or unfair, mostly unfair. Prize picks, hellhole of an organization yesterday. But people want to pile on players on the Commanders just because, and everyone is looking for social media jokes to get themselves some clout on social media. I am not worried about Sonny Styles. When the games matter, he's going to be fine. I think what we saw yesterday was he's maybe a little too much in his own head, and he's desperate to start making some plays. If he slows down a little bit, he's going to be fine. The plays are naturally going to be made. His instincts are going to take over, and he's going to be fine. Anyone that is suggesting that he's already a bust after two preseason games needs to take their phone and fire it into the sun. And if you see a friend who is doing that, take their phone. You probably can't throw it into the sun, but maybe throw it into like a lake or something. They don't need to be getting those Twitter fingers off and running. Patrick is in Virginia, wants to weigh in on who he saw in the preseason game. Patrick dropped. Patrick, give us a call back if you're still near a phone. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Who are the players that you took away positively from Washington's preseason game number two against Detroit? Maybe you want to weigh in on Sonny Styles. I am confident in Sonny Styles, despite the fact that he hasn't played like an all-pro in two preseason games. What do you think about the Commanders' seventh overall pick? 800-636-1067. More of your phone calls, more of your tweets at The Denton Day when we get back on 106.7 of the Team 980. I'd like a new center if T.I. is offering. I don't know if he is offering, but if he wants to put up some money for the Commanders to get a new center, that'd be nice. It's D-Day in D.C., Denton Day, 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. You can tweet me at The Denton Day. I am getting a lot of tweets, so I will read those off about guys and players that people on the internet found to be good yesterday in reaction to the game. But the phone lines are open as well, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Dominic is in Florida, wants to weigh in. Dominic, what's up, man?
Hey, Dan, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Yeah, two players stood out to me. The first off, and maybe it was already said, but I'll say it anyways, is Kaliak Manis. I'll be honest with you, the more I watch this kid play, the more I like him. I fall in love with him even a lot more. I'll go on a limb and say this is, I think he's already proven to me, even though he was playing against backups, that if he needs to come in for a game or two to manage things while Jaden gets healthy, I think he's going to be just fine. And I think it also allows Marcus Mariota to not have to rush to get back from his injury either. I mean, what people may not know or don't remember is about Kaliak Manis is he came from Greg Schiano's system, which is a pro-style offense, or a pro-style, you know, an NFL system, because he's already been there. So he's got that advantage already. So I'm really excited about Kaliak Manis. And the other player I was thinking of, too, is Hurst, the defensive tackle. Two sacks, you know, on a game where he literally just got here last week. But with the injuries, you know, to pain that happened the second rounder there.
Johnny Newton.
I'm drawing a blank. Newton, yeah. I mean, I feel a lot better, you know, about the depth there, even with him and Ricky Barber too. And those guys have flashed. So I think Kalyk, Mattis, and Hurst are my two selections.
Dominic, I appreciate it. That's a great call, and I like you highlighting Hurst, the defensive tackle that had a really good game yesterday. Kalyk, Mattis is not only is he looking like the guy that's going to be quarterback three, they have found the guy that is the long-term answer at backup quarterback. You know, Marcus is not going to be here for forever. And in fact, it is actually stunning that he has come back for year number three. I thought after last year, somebody might try and scoop him up to, I don't know, like an Arizona or somebody that is not really trying to win, but is going to give him a chance to play. He really likes Jayden Daniels, which is awesome. I think Jayden Daniels really likes Marcus Mariota, which is also awesome. But the long-term backup is positioned to be Ethan Kalyk Mattis because of a lot of the things that Dominic just said. He plays on time really, really well. He understands concepts at a really high level, and he's not afraid to push the ball down the field. That's a necessity, I feel like. And as much as they like Sam Hartman, which him getting the first second-team reps yesterday was a bit surprising to me. I would have thought that they went to Kalyk Mattis. As much as they like Sam Hartman, though, he doesn't push the ball down the field. That's not his strong suit. He's a little bit more athletic than Kalyk Mattis is, although we haven't really seen Ethan run. Hartman's not afraid to tuck it and run, but if it comes to, hey, we need it's third and 12. What are you going to do on third and 12? I'm trusting Ethan, which for Kalyk Mattis, we need to come up with a universal nickname for him because I see on Twitter and on social media, there's a bunch of different nicknames for him. I call him the Big Greek because he's a tall dude and he has a big arm. I call him the Big Greek. I've seen a few people call him the Greek Gunslinger.
I've heard AK-16.
I've heard that one too, AK-16. I don't love that one as much. I think when you think of an AK weapon, it's 47, not right. 16. So I don't love the gun one as much. Someone called him like the baklava bomber because he throws bombs and a baklava is a Greek dessert. That was kind of funny, I thought. But we need to come with an official nickname once he makes the roster a week from now. We need an official nickname for Ethan Kalyk Mattis because everyone having a different nickname is confusing. It's convoluted. He's a man of many nicknames, sure, but there needs to be like one that we can all universally agree on and say, hey, it is the Big Greek, or it is the Greek Gunslinger. I might change my tune. I think the Greek Gunslinger is a pretty good one for a quarterback that is a backup quarterback. But if you have a suggestion for a nickname for Ethan Kalyk Mattis, tweet me at the Denton Day. A few tweets from some of you who have been tweeting me throughout the course of the show. Ross tweets me and he says, Denton, I've noticed this year that everybody flies to the ball. There's no standing around, no jogging. Also, the tackling is noticeably better. And he agrees with Ethan Kalyk Mattis that he should be quarterback number three. So this stems from the conversation that I had 20 minutes ago. One of my favorite things that I saw from yesterday's performance was that Tyler Owens is flying around the field and Quan Martin is playing with a level of freedom that we have not seen him play with, at least in the last year. I would say at the end of 2024, Quan was playing at a high level, even despite the fact that he had two separated shoulders, which was crazy. He had one of the best plays of his career, that pick six, ironically, against Detroit with two bad shoulders. But he's playing with a level of freedom that we have not seen in a pretty long time. I think the tackling does look a little bit better as well. So I've really liked those guys flying around the football. A bunch of you are agreeing with Kalyk Mattis being quarterback three, which I really, really, I'm like firmly planting the flag on that one. And I've kind of been on that for a little bit now. I just think he plays with way more confidence. And just from an eye test stand, I got four eyes, so I like watching guys that appeal to all four of the eyes that I have on the center of my face. You can keep tweeting me at the Denton. A few more. Michael tweets at me and says, you said center and left tackle are the vitals on the offensive line, but nobody takes a center in round one. Well, Tyler Linderbaum was drafted in round number one in 2022 at position 25 by the Ravens, after the Ravens selected Kyle Hamilton at 14. Meanwhile, that was the year where Washington took a wide receiver that they traded a few years ago, Jahan Dotson at number 16. It's like the Ravens do something really, really positive as an organization. I would like to do that consistently here, if that is an option. Because drafting a center, you know how good you have to be at center in college to be drafted in the first round. It's rare. It's very rare. It doesn't happen a ton. So the fact that the Ravens got one and Linderbaum was huge, then they let his ass walk, which we'll see how well that plays out for them in the long term. I did kind of forget how much money he got paid, Tyler Linderbaum, because we have had this conversation on today's show about should Washington have just ponied up the money. He got like $27 million a year, which is a lot of money for a center. Like, that's like a lot of money for a center. There were other options, though, that Washington could have paid, and they decided not to pay. That's a problem. When we get back, I have composed a final 53 after 2 weeks of the preseason. I'm going to share the offense with you on the other side, and then I'll give you an opportunity, tear it apart, rip it apart, call me an idiot, 800-636-1067. You can tweet me at @TheDentonDay, but my final 53 on offense, the projections after 2 weeks of the preseason, next on 106.7 The Fan.